This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, your pop culture home.
Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download at audibletrial.com/thekingsofsport. Audible.com has over 100,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. To start your trial today, go to audibletrial.com/thekingsofsport.
Welcome to the Kings of Sport, the podcast that's changing the game one show at a time, with your hosts, Alfred Conaway, Nate Milton, and Marcus Vanderberg. So sit back and relax, because you're now down with the Kings.
And welcome to the Kings of Sport, the podcast that's changing the game one show at a time, a.k.a. the world's most dangerous sports show, a.k.a. Keeping It Real Radio. We back for another week. I am the Godfather, Nate Milton, joined as always by Big Nasty Alfred Cunnell and Marcus Vanderberg, my partners in crime. What's up, fellas?
What's up?
What's up, Nate?
You know, it's a great week. It's, full disclosure, we out here, you know. Our attention is divided because Marcus and my squads are playing right now in the baseball playoffs, to the divisional series, and you know it ain't looking real good right now. But you know Atlanta's been through some tough times before. We gonna come back on these boys.
You're used to playoff disappointments. That's all right. You know how this works. Great regular season, shit the bed in the playoffs. You're used to it.
Hey, I'm just glad we made it this year instead of choking like last season.
I know you guys wait for the playoffs to choke every year.
At least we waited to the playoffs this year.
That's a good sign. You're making steps in the right direction.
You know, we're making some progress. Shout out to Freddie Gonzalez. But, you know, we'll get to the Major League Baseball here in a little bit. But, you know, we got a lot of stuff to talk about off the top. A couple football stories I wanted to hit real quick that happened over the past week. But before we get into that, how's you guys' week been?
Fantastic. I have some good news and I have some bad news, at least for you guys. The good news is, as hosts, we are a respectable 500 in our Briscoe Sanders Fantasy Football League. We're 6-6, so congratulations to you guys. The bad news is that I have 4 of those 6 wins. You two clowns are 1-3 apiece.
I'm just glad Marcus joined us on the winning side.
He did. Marcus got his first win, so congratulations, Marcus. Maybe your second win will come in another 4 weeks. And you'll be about, you know, what, 2-6 or something like that. So
listen here, you keep on chugging along. You guys trashed my team. As we discussed last week, my team on paper is solid. So I stand by my team. I'm confident that I can beat Dennis Black and Asian this week. We get to play each other again.
The light skin bowl.
Light skin violence. What is this world coming to, Marcus? Or Nate, is this what you had in mind when you came up with this league?
Absolutely. I was hoping that we'd get some rivalries. And you know how college football has those silly rivalries where they got like the battle for the brown jug or the battle for the golden axe? I think Marcus and Dennis should be like the battle for the bottle of activator, the light skin bottle. the good hair bowl.
I like that. Let's book that.
Shout out to Dennis Black and Asian again, who won our baseball league. So, you know, hopefully we'll be talking to Dennis here in a couple weeks on the program. But, my week was cool. My week was cool, you know, just working more hours at work. But, you know, I didn't get a chance to watch a lot of sports, but the sports I did get to watch were very exciting. And the stories that I got to catch were great, especially a story that I know is near and dear to Marcus's heart, which made me laugh. I don't like to laugh at anybody's pain or misery, but the way this dude got set up and sent out made me laugh, and that is one Lane Kiffin. Kiffin don't know, but if he didn't know before, now he knows. Lane Kiffin, he gone, and he didn't even get to go back to the office and clean out his office. He was gone at the airport.
Here's the thing I will say about Lane Kiffin, because a lot of people in a lot of regions, including Los Angeles, Namely, Tennessee are very happy about Lane Kiffin leaving. He's somebody who's been described by a lot of college football analysts as somebody who doesn't have a good relationship with the truth. We saw how he went out in Tennessee like a thief in the night and jumped ship to USC. And then now with USC, he's been dealing with a lot of sanctions. A lot of people think this is karma, but he's been in some bad situations, whether it be USC and their sanctions, whether it be the mess that the Oakland Raiders always are. I'm not ready to throw in the towel on Lane Kiffin as being a viable head coach. Maybe not even a head coach. Maybe an offensive coordinator. Something if you give him talent in the right situation.
I don't know about offensive coordinator. He really struggled with play calling. So maybe if he focused just on coaching and not on calling plays, then maybe. But he's got a history of falling upwards after getting fired, so... Who knows? He could land on his feet next year with another top 25 job somewhere. But for the time being, he's probably going to be number one in this town, and everyone is glad to see him go.
I was going to say, you know, he is kind of the living kind of definition, the antithesis of the Peter principle. You know, where you fail to the level of you rise to the level of your failures. Lane Kiffin seems to get better jobs at each stop. You know, he went from the Raiders to Tennessee to USC. And so I'm thinking at this rate, if he keeps failing, he'll be the commissioner of football by 2018.
And it's perfectly explainable, though. It's because Lane Kiffin has been in these situations where if you take out these variables, a lot of teams and organizations are saying to themselves, well, let's see him coach in this atmosphere. Let's not forget, he had it going in Tennessee. He was starting to build that recruiting system. And also, he took Alabama to the limit, if you'll remember. It was very close games against Alabama that Tennessee wasn't supposed to be in. So Lane Kiffin, he does have some level of talent, I think, in these people's eyes, which is why he keeps getting these jobs, because he's never really been in a situation that it's just like, okay, this is stable. All we need you to do is lead this team to a championship. Let's see if you can do it.
Let's cut to the real reason why he keeps getting these jobs, because his daddy is Monty Kiffin.
Well, his daddy didn't do him any favors last time he was here.
Yeah, I mean, that archaic
defense. I mean, if he was Lane Johnson, would he be getting these opportunities? I don't think so.
I don't know how much pull his daddy has anymore, though. I mean, he's had a job with the Cowboys, but no one's really praising Monty Kiffin's work. Not in recent years.
I think his associations with the old USC teams that were doing so well and with Pete Carroll, I think that has gone further in the college game than Lane Kiffin's association.
He can thank Pete for that USC job. If he didn't have that connection to the program before, there's no way USC would have hired him. But they were trying to get anyone who had a connection to Pete Carroll, and it just happened to be Kiffin. You know, Sarkisian's up in Washington, so they couldn't really get him. So they had to settle for him, and it backfired.
They should have broke Norm Child with that paper.
No, Norm. Norm shouldn't be coaching anywhere. He's getting old,
there is a certain loud, brash, kind of ingenious personality on Monday Night Football who I would die to have come to USC. What do you guys think the chances are of John Gruden being USC's next head coach?
I don't see. I mean, why would you give up that job?
I think he still does want to coach. He just is waiting for that perfect opportunity. It would be a great job for him, I think. I think he would be a perfect guy for that kind of job, and he would be the closest to that Pete Carroll type where the boosters love him, the fans love him, he's personable, the players will play for him. So, I mean, I could see it, but I don't know.
He's got a really sweet deal right now with ESPN. I think, you know, USC, it'd probably be a tempting position for Gruden, but, I mean, they would have to really wine and dine this cat because, I mean, he is getting millions of dollars to talk about football, and you know, he can still kind of give his knowledge and give his wisdom and put his personality out there without ever having to lose a game, you know?
But money is no object at USC. We're talking about USC here. So whatever the price is, USC can pay it. So he'll have the money that he needs. It's just if he has any desire to work with Pat Dayton for a school that he has no real connection to.
Yeah, that, and it's very easy to believe the fact that he's happy with ESPN. He does have a sweet gig, but you watch him and he's a coach. He's a coach at heart. He gets so into the analysis portion of NFL and he's always calling out the plays and the schemes and the skinny wide banana or all that nomenclature he's saying. You know he's got that in his blood still. And if the right opportunity came along, I definitely think John Gruden could see himself back on an NFL sideline.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing that Gruden has is he's still young enough to, you know, to go back into the game and do it. But like we've seen before, you know, we saw it with Bill Cowher, we saw it with Brian Billick, that siren song of the media aspect of things, you know, you get in there and you say, okay, I'm only going to stay here for a year. I'm only going to stay here for 2 years. And then you look up and you've been with CBS, you've been with ESPN for, you know, 6 or 7 years because it is such a comfortable position to have. And like I said, there's not that stress, that living and dying every weekend on whether you won or lost.
That's very true. And in terms of current coaches, I mean, we could be looking at our first black coach of USC. There have been several names. Well, there have been Pepper Hamilton tossed around. But James
Top
Franklin at Vanderbilt, Charlie Swan at Louisville, Kevin Sumlin at Texas A&M. So, I mean, there are some decent options in play. I don't want to see Jack Del Rio coach his team. No. And I'm hoping this is all just a smoke screen. But, you know, I think they will have a choice of whoever they want in the offseason. And I think Ed Orgeron will have the team in good hands. I think he will turn around the recruiting that's been a nightmare this season. And I think they'll be in decent shape next season.
I think they'll be all right. I mean, USC is USC. You know, the name, the area, the campus almost sells itself. You just have to, you know, get that right fit in terms of a coach in the family, in the fold. So I think they'll be all right. It's going to be bumpy, though. I think, you know, this is pretty much a lame duck season. I don't know what effect this will have on a recruiting class, but, I mean, I think we should all just take a moment. If you're a USC fan or a Lane Kiffin hater, just go ahead and get your drink on this weekend.
No, it wouldn't surprise me if this team turned around just from based on the firing of Lane Kiffin. This team is a talented team, so.
And you can tell the players have no real connection with him.
Yeah. So if USC were to go out and run the table until the UCLA game, it wouldn't surprise me. But I mean, even still, it would still probably be too late for a Rose Bowl opportunity. But part of me feels like this team just gave up on them. And hopefully Ed Orgeron can knock some sense in them and they'll have a new sense of enlightenment and reason to play for this coach.
And as far as recruiting goes, I think this only helps recruiting initially to have Lane Kiffin fired because a lot of these top recruits were attending USC games and they're hearing fire Kiffin chants and Kiffin's job security is up in the air. And even notwithstanding, a lot of students didn't want to play for Lane Kiffin. So now that he's gone and there is going to be that stability, students are going to be coming back to USC with an open mind saying, okay, well, maybe this is somewhere that I would like to play.
When Snoop Dogg's son is dissing you at 16 talking about Lane Kiffin should have been fired. I mean, that's not a good look for the program. So I think this would do a lot for recruiting.
yeah, it was like, little Snoop, what you think about Coach Kiffin? We don't love him, no. He out. Oh. Oh, man. So, yeah, we'll keep an eye on that USC situation. I think it's going to be very intriguing, especially in the offseason. But let's go from one exit in the college ranks to another exit in the NFL, and the curious case of Josh Freeman, finally, I guess it's not the end of the story, but at least it's the end of one chapter of the story as he was finally released by the Tampa Bay Buccaneers earlier today.
What a mess. And I think it all starts with Schiano, the head coach, and the Tampa Bay front office for pretty much forcing this guy out of the picture and off the team. I don't know where you begin with the story, but what did you find the most, I guess, disturbing about this whole thing?
To me, if it's true, like, we don't know who leaked the story about
Greg Schiano, probably.
Allegedly. Allegedly. Got to make sure.
I said probably.
You know, we don't know who leaked the story about him being a part of the NFL drug program, but, you know, I do applaud Freeman for getting out in front of the story and owning up to it and explaining it. But whether it was Schiano or the organization or, you know, whoever, who put that out there. That's despicable because that's not just shady. It's not just counterproductive if you're trying to trade the guy, get something of value out of the guy. But it's also, you know, a violation of, you know, the workplace rules.
Yeah, and it was essentially a smear campaign on Josh Freeman. It sounds like we're overreacting, but there's no coincidence in the fact that in the days following or leading up to Josh Freeman being ousted from Tampa Bay, you see all these stories come out on him as if to get the public against him before he leaves so that Tampa Bay and the organization can feel justified in releasing him. And it was just such a random, ill-timed batch of stories that were all negative. And you got to feel bad for Josh Freeman in this situation. He had to be the happiest person in the entire building in Tampa Bay when Mike Glennon throws the ball late and turns it over, leading to a Tampa Bay loss. I think that was an example of Greg Schiano trying to show up Josh Freeman and, you know, try to show everybody that, hey, I've got my guy. He's going to lead this into a late game icing drive. And it completely blew up in his face.
It blew up in his face. And that's how they've lost a lot of their games this season. Is they've lost close games. They lost by 1 point to the Jets. They lost by 2 points to the Saints. Yes, Josh Freeman was terrible in both of those games, but at the same time, who knows what was going on behind the scenes with him and Schiano. So it's hard to say if that, you know, had an effect in this game. But, you know, we're talking about a guy who threw for 4,000 yards last year. Yeah, he's been prone to turnovers and interceptions, but, you know, he's proven himself in this league to be an adequate quarterback and someone who really came through in the fourth quarter. So for him to just see his career sort of spiral out of control the first couple of games and then, you know, ultimately all this stuff that came out that eventually led to his release is unfortunate. And hopefully, you know, a team like Jacksonville, who needs a quarterback bad, can pick up a guy like Josh Freeman, because Tampa Bay is on the books for his contract. So he's pretty much, you know, getting paid by the Bucs and he'll have the opportunity to play elsewhere. So I hope for the best for this kid because he's still young, he's still talented, and I don't see why he can't succeed in this league.
Yeah, I mean, we knew this was a setup from the get-up. As soon as Glennon was drafted, you know, the clock was ticking on Josh Freeman, and as great a college coach as Schiano was, and, you know, that's the kind of guy that you'd like to have out there coaching the young man, I just don't think he has the mentality. I'm not going to say he doesn't have the X's and O's to coach pros, but in terms of the temperament and the mentality, it just seems like there's so many mind games going on. And these are not just men as opposed to college kids, but these are corporations. You know, these are 53 individual businesses out there. And, you know, you can't try to handle these guys the same way that you did college kids. And I don't know if it's something that other teams do, but, you know, hearing about Freeman being banished up to the suite because he was inactive and all these other things, you know, that came out over the course of the past couple of weeks, it just seems like, you know, either Schiano had zero control or Schiano knew exactly what he was doing and he was trying to, like Alfred said, wage a smear campaign against Josh Freeman.
Not on this day. Headed into next season, would you rather be Josh Freeman or Mark Sanchez? Think about it. It sounds obvious, but would you rather be Josh Freeman or Mark Sanchez? Nate, I'll start with you.
I think Sanchez will probably get a better shot than Freeman.
Wow, really?
I do. I think Sanchez, depending on how his contract is structured, I think Sanchez has been, even though he's been inconsistent over the course of his career, he's been more consistent than Josh Freeman over the course of Josh Freeman's career.
Marcus?
All right, it'd be Josh Freeman. He's healthy, number one. You know, Sanchez is having, you know, pretty serious shoulder surgery. He'll be out 4 to 6 months. That is not what you want as a quarterback, especially one who is a free agent looking for a new deal. So I much rather be Josh Freeman, who, yeah, he can't say that he's taking his team to 2 AFC title games. Yeah. But, you know, he's put up decent numbers. He probably put up better passing numbers than Mark Sanchez in the last couple of years. So I'd rather be Josh Freeman.
And I know a team out west that's always on the lookout for a quarterback. You can't tell me, even if just from a PR publicity standpoint, Mark Sanchez in that silver and black, you can't tell me that wouldn't sell some tickets.
They did the USD quarterback thing once before. It didn't work out too well with Carson Palmer. I don't see them doing it. I think Terrell Pryor, you know, he's not bad.
He's better than Blaine Gabbert.
Everyone's better than Blaine Gabbert.
There's another guy in California that's better than Blaine Gabbert. We won't talk about him this week, though. We talk about him every week.
Who's that?
Tim Tebow out there practicing in California.
No.
Uh-oh.
You can't, our Jacksonville fans, I don't know how many Jacksonville fans listen to this program. I want y'all to be honest and leave us some feedback on the Facebook board, facebook.com/KingsofSport. Right now, if you could have Tim Tebow or Blaine Gabbert as your starting quarterback, who would you take? I think if we have two Jacksonville fans, we'll probably get two votes for Tim Tebow.
That's why Blaine Gabbert's general managers, by the way.
Blaine Gabbert is terrible.
And Jacksonville's a circus, and it looks like a high school team, and they're getting blown. And next week when they play the Broncos, there's some talk. They're going to be a 27-point dog, which is the highest point spread in NFL history. And
that might be giving Jacksonville too much credit.
Think about Tim Tebow going against the Broncos. I mean, that alone is going to sell some tickets. Get Tim Tebow on that team.
There's a lot of bad quarterbacking in the NFL right now.
Is there?
There is. Christian Ponder. Granted, Christian Ponder's hurt now. But your boy Brandon Weeden before he got replaced by I don't know what Brian Hoyer got into, but
he heard you talking about him, and he said, "Oh yeah, Nate, I'll show you."
Yeah. Then he got hurt.
He'll be back.
But yeah, there's a lot of bad quarterbacking in the NFL, and conversely, we're seeing a lot of sluggish games. I mean, you know, you get your Denver's who was out there, and man, Denver carved up Philly last week, and Philly put up 20, which is, you know, if you put up 20, you should be in a game. But they were never in that contest. Your boy Drew Brees out there in New Orleans is still doing work. Tom Brady doing work. So the elite quarterbacks are still doing work. But, you know, I'd say quarterbacks 10 through 32, it's a crapshoot what you get week to week.
Yeah, but I'd say the bigger story is the renaissance here for quarterbacks. You see, Jay Cutler has been playing as good, if not the best football he's played. I know he kind of struggled this past week in Detroit, but he's obviously a different quarterback under Mark Trestman. Phillip Rivers has had the biggest renaissance here of any quarterback. He's throwing 30, 35 times a game. You tell me he throws that many times on last year's team with that offensive line, he would be out of commission by week three. But, you know, Mark or his coach, Mike McCoy has been getting the ball out of his hands nice and quickly. And it's when I heard that and that was her game plan to get Phillip Rivers back on track, I was thinking he was going to throw 40 interceptions and get sacked a bunch of times, but that's actually worked. So guys like that, and even Drew Brees, who I know he had a good year last year, but he still threw, 20 interceptions? And now he's back to being the accurate, reliable Drew Brees that we know and love. So I think, the renaissance here is a pretty big story as well.
Yeah, now we just got to get your boy Aaron Rodgers on the right track.
No, he'll be on the right track. He'll be fine. He went against that juggernaut, Marvin Lewis, in the Cincinnati Bengals. You can't expect too much from him.
Except against Cleveland, you know.
Hey, that's a good defense, I'm telling you. Very underrated defense in Cleveland.
Uh-huh. Yeah. That is like, if you're in the AFC North, you got to, you know, reevaluate what you're doing with your life. Mike Tomlin. Ben Roethlisberger. You letting Cleveland, the Cleveland Browns, with zero running game and a fifth-year quarterback that nobody's ever heard of outside of the Akron area. Step your game up.
He spent years under Bill Belichick and Tom Brady's brain trust, and now he's bringing it to Cleveland.
He's a Bill Belichick guy.
It's not just a system.
Yeah, we'll see how well Matt Castle does next week. With the Vikings, if he can make it two in a row.
Is he getting the start? I know that there is some.
Yeah, last I heard, Leslie Frazier was, you know, he was trying to preserve Ponder's ego by saying, you know, Christian's not right yet. We, you know, we don't want to rush Christian back before he's right. You know, coach speak for Christian sucks, and, you know, we're going to roll with this dude because he won. But, I mean, the offense, and even Adrian Peterson kind of gave Matt Castle the vote of confidence, you know, and his post-game comments. So I think, you know, I don't want to say controversy because when, you know, your choices are Christian Ponder and Matt Castle, it's not that controversial, but I could definitely see Leslie Frazier making the switch sooner rather than later. So and, we'll leave it right there for the NFL. And I did tell Marcus on Twitter, I guess he and Brother Jamie, shout out to Jamie, had a conversation and they wanted to talk about hockey. So we'll talk hockey for like a minute, 64 seconds.
Whatever. Start the timer.
Yeah, we're starting the timer. So go ahead with your Ladies and gentlemen, it's Marcus Vandenberg's NHL Minute, the coolest minute in sports.
Ask the hockey negro. Hockey's back, everybody. Hockey is back. We'll just touch on the Patrick Wall story. Did you see that video from last night?
Yeah, I did see that today when he knocked down the barrier.
Yeah, so former Hall of Fame goalie, Patrick Wall is back with the Avalanche. He's the new head coach, and game one of his coaching career. A guy who is known for being a bit of a hothead. His son got into a fight a few years ago during a junior league match that he was involved in as well. Got a little upset at the Anaheim Ducks and coach Bruce Boudreau for a play that was a little dirty on their top draft pick. And at the very end of the game, Patrick Waugh tried to shove down the plexiglass barrier between the two benches. He got fined $10,000 for his outburst today, but it made for quite the exciting debut. And, you know, it's been a good week of hockey. I've watched a lot of hockey this week at the office, and there's been a lot more scoring this first week. There are some tweaks to the rules that I think, you know, help lead to that. So, hey, give hockey a try. And I will stand by the fact that hockey is the best sport to watch in person, hands down.
It is way too early to get in. I don't know about you, Alfred. It's just still way too early for me to get invested in hockey.
It'll be too early in 3 months for me.
Like, let me tell you how, like, Marcus, a white girl couldn't get me interested in hockey last year. Yeah, you know, I love my snowflake sisters. But, if you know, I mean, you could try. I mean, I like the NHL playoffs, but anything before that, I can't really get too invested in, brother.
That's all right. We'll keep working on it.
Yeah, just keep trying.
I mean, this is a bad time. I mean, your schedule is what it is, but you're in the middle of the NFL season. You got the baseball playoffs. You got college football. You got the NBA kicking off in a month or so. It's a packed time of the year in terms of, how many sports you can digest on a nightly basis.
Well, this first month or so we're talking about, yeah, there's probably one or two baseball games on during the night, but there's no basketball to distract them, you know. The other night, there was literally a wild card game, and there was hockey on. That was
Are you
it.
Sleeping on the WNBA finals, brother?
Listen, they got bumped by with the Disney Ice or whatever, knocked them out the Phillips Arena. So, yeah, who cares about Minnesota and Atlanta? Go Lynx, I guess. So, yeah, at WNBA.
How did Taurasi and Griner lose? Like, I didn't even watch that, but how did they, you know, if Minnesota is the representative out of the West, how did Phoenix lose?
Oh, I checked out. I don't know. Once the Sparks got out that, I checked out.
Oh, so you actually followed it and then checked out.
Well, I kept an eye
on
it.
He was courtside at the Sparks game wearing his retro Lisa Leslie jersey. Come on back, Lisa. We love you.
I've been to a couple of Sparks games. It's quite the interesting crowd.
I bet it is.
It's a seafood crowd.
I was going to say, like there's this, I don't watch a lot of Tosh.0, but he did this great bit making fun of, you know, the Visa MasterCard commercial with the Super Bowl club. Mm-hmm. And he was like, with Visa MasterCard, I get to live out my dreams and I'm part of an exclusive club. And it was Tosh and like five old women. And it was the WNBA Eastern Conference Finals Club. We've never missed an Eastern Conference Final. They had like on that New York Liberty jersey. Yeah, if you can find it on YouTube, check that out. But yeah, so that was Marcus's Hockey Minute, Ask a Hockey Negro. So we'll do that once a week. I feel like stations have to do their part to fulfill
identification.
Not just station identification, but like the
like Canada as a Canadian program.
Yeah, like CanCom or like PSAs, you have to have enough, you know, PSA content. Like, we have to, that's our duty. You know, we give people a minute of hockey with Marcus, and we're good. We fulfilled our quota for another week. So, that's going to do it for the A Block. Coming up next, we're bringing it back for another week. We got issues, and this week we're going to talk about the NFL and a documentary that's coming out on PBS that Roger Goodell might not be too happy with. So, stick and stay. We got more Kings of Sports. That's the break.
Don't do the crime if you can't do the time. Ooh.
Don't do it now.
so deep in the night.
Keep it going now. Terry.
Welcome back to the show that's trending worldwide, from coast to coast and station to station. It's sports talk for our generation. The Kings of Sport, thekingsofsport.com.
We are back on the Kings of Sport, powered by Place to Be Nation, PlaceToBeNation.com. They are your one-stop spot for all the latest news, information, and opinions in the world of sports, gaming, professional wrestling, movies, music. Place to Be Nation, your one-stop spot for the best in pop culture. And it is time once again for a segment that we debuted last week. You know, a lot of shows have hot topics. A lot of shows have, you know, things that they want to discuss. They want to give their take. They want to give their opinion. Well, here in the Kings of Sport, we got issues. And this week, our issue is, you know, it's something that kind of came to the forefront, you know, a documentary that is being produced, Frontline by PBS, and it's debuting next Tuesday. It's called League of Denial, and it really tackles the concussion issue in the NFL head on. And the ironic thing is, I believe it was co-produced with the NFL, but, you know, with some of the things that have come out in this documentary, Roger Goodell and those boys are not too pleased with this product, with this particular project, Marcus.
It's co-produced with ESPN.
ESPN, okay. Yeah. And indirectly, ESPN, a partner with the NFL. So, yeah, ESPN kind of caught in the middle of this thing.
Yeah. First in peace to E.J. Manuel's knee. He just got rocked. And I'm pretty sure he's probably done for the year based on that hit.
Freeman.
Get ready for Jeff Toole. Secondly, yeah, so this project was in partnership with ESPN. They collaborated for 15 months on the project. And sometime earlier in the summer, ESPN decided to pull out the project. There were a lot of speculation that the reason they pulled out was the lead NFL, Goodell, was pressuring ESPN to pull out. You know, the ESPN and NFL are major TV partners, and, you know, probably not the best look to have ESPN attached to this documentary, which will probably do a lot of damage to the NFL in terms of player safety and concussions. So, so you mentioned, you know, concussions and the whole point of this documentary. I'm curious to see what, just going forward in the future, what it will take for the lead to address these issues. Will it take someone dying in a game, or someone who gets paralyzed? We've had people paralyzed before in NFL games, but it's been a while. So will it take a situation like that where the lead finally decides to not only address player safety for players currently in the lead, but looking forward to their health and well-being long past retirement?
I mean, they just had a settlement with some of the retired players. So isn't that, in a way, I know it's not legally an admission of guilt, but isn't that some way, you know, kind of admitting that, hey, we were kind of complicit with the way that you guys ended up?
Yeah, they had a $765 million settlement for 4,200 players who claimed they suffered brain injury from playing football. So, I mean, that's a big number. And, you know, we're talking about enough money that these guys can, you know, hopefully pay their bills, but, you know, we're not sure. That's a lot of people to split up that amount of money to. So I think it's going to take more than just, you know, paying guys off for them to come to grips with this.
This could be the best documentary that we see about concussions and player safety in the NFL, but to me, it's about 1 or 2 years too late. To say that the NFL hasn't really, or they're still ignoring player safety issues, is ludicrous. The NFL is obviously making some effort now, and maybe a little late to the party, but they're making efforts in at least educating people on player safety, even at the Pop Warner level, where they're reteaching kids how to tackle. The league is gone towards a offensive-minded model where, you know, hitting defenseless wide receivers are very careful with hitting quarterbacks and launching yourself. There's a lot of bang-bang plays where players obviously led with their shoulders, but at first glance, referees will throw a flag because it just looks dangerous. So, you know, there is a player safety element in the NFL right now, but again, like Nate said, there has been a settlement, and that largely kind of nipped this thing in the bud for the NFL, who kind of slipped through the cracks with that aspect, the financial legal aspect of concussions.
I think one of the interesting things, you know, I've just seen some of the previews for the frontline piece, the League of Denial, and I think one of the most kind of telling things is there is a doctor, and I can't remember his name, the gentleman's name, but it's an African doctor who, ironically enough, did not, you know, even know what a Super Bowl was, didn't understand the simplest concept.
Dr. Conaway?
Yes, Dr. Cunnell.
Stop it.
Dr. Nasty, I believe is what they call him.
But, my father actually is Dr. Cunnell. So.
That's why I know. That's why I said him.
Wow, you're going after my daddy? I'm going to pile on 200 points just for that.
Wow. But, you know, this doctor, he looked at the, I believe it was Mike Webster, the old Steelers center, after he had passed, and looked at his brain, and it's like, you know, this is the brain of a man that is, you know, 70 years old. This is what it looks like with the dementia and the damage to the brain stem. But, you know, Mike Webster was, you know what, in his 40s when he passed? And we've seen this, you know, with other players, even more recently. You talk about Dave Duerson. You talk about Junior Seau. And the damage done to the brain. Kyle Turley, a current player, still alive. You know, he has the sensitivity to light. He has memory lapses and things of that nature. And I think Alfred is right in one respect, you know, in terms of the NFL. You know, they're being proactive in terms of the game going forward. But I do think there is still a lot that we don't know about what the NFL knew and about what the NFL were telling the players back in the day.
Yeah.
I think there definitely is, but what is going to – the NFL is pretty much Teflon at this point when it comes to those matters. I don't see how this is going to bring the NFL down. All this is going to do is going to create more public speculation and going to hold the NFL accountable in the court of public opinion in making sure that they make player safety a priority, which I think they already have done.
No, I agree. And you figure there's got to be the technology eventually where there's a helmet that does a good enough job to prevent or at least slow down the concussion rate. I don't get why there isn't more emphasis on better helmets to slow down this issue, because you can't change the game. I mean, this isn't going to be, you know, a situation where the NFL becomes flag football. It's not going to be. People will still watch football regardless of what happens with these guys, and there will always be players who are willing to sign up and take the risk. So, I mean, what are we really talking about here?
I mean, running it forward, though, I do think that, you know, there is the potential that, you know, I mean, the game already, if you look at the game now as compared to it was back in the 80s, it's not radically different, but there are some significant changes that have been made over the years. So, you know, spinning it forward, we're not going to see any drastic measures or changes, I don't think, in the next 10, 15, even 20 years. But, you know, in the next generation, you know, are we going to still have football as it currently exists, or will it be something that we might not even recognize?
It's definitely not going to be as it currently exists. This is more of a transitional period where we still are seeing those hard hits. I think you give it another generation, you're not seeing people launch themselves at other players in general is going to be pretty rare. So it's not going to be the same, but I think it's still going to maintain its popularity, and it's still going to be football, and the league is going to move forward and try to do its best job in hopefully retaining some balance between offense and defense, so that, you know, defense doesn't continue to get piled on.
And it might seem crazy, but if you want to really put an end to the concussions, remove the helmets. That way you're not having these guys launch themselves like weapons at each other, knowing that they don't have a helmet on. I mean, it might seem silly at first, but, I mean, it would really slow down the game in terms of these guys, you know, seriously getting hurt.
Go back to the leather helmets.
Yeah.
I don't know about that. Gucci helmets.
But I think finally the last thing I want to think about, you know, is in terms of other sports, is this something that is just going to be contained with the NFL and contained with college football, or is it something that we see, you know, kind of expand to other sports such as hockey? You know, we saw that brutal injury earlier this week. Is it going to, you know, filter its way into MMA? Is it going to filter its way even more so into boxing? You know, are these sports going to be altered as well? Because you know, like Albert said, the NFL is pretty much Teflon, but these other sports aren't, you know, and I think we could see more drastic changes in these sports rather than the NFL going forward, Marcus.
I think hockey, we will eventually see the end of fighting. I think that's the direction they're heading in that league. In terms of boxing and MMA, I don't see a big, you know, difference of that. People aren't going to start wearing headgear in fights. I don't see that happening. But, you know, I think what's interesting is you notice the change in the WWE. You know, we're seeing guys who are getting time off for concussions. It's being explained on air the reason why they're out. This is something they didn't do 5 years ago. You know, if a guy got a concussion, either you didn't hear about it or they just worked through it. But now it seems like they're even trying to do the right thing and allow these guys to come back and, you know, be 100% healthy before they step in the ring.
They've also eliminated unprotected chair shots to the head and internally fined guys who break those rules. So, yeah, no, it definitely has trickled down to the WWE.
Yeah, and this is definitely an issue that will be talked about and discussed for weeks and months and years to come. And I'm definitely interested in checking out the Frontline documentary again. It is called League of Denial. It comes on PBS next Tuesday or this Tuesday, depending on when you're listening to this particular podcast, and it's very interesting because I think one of the assertions that the documentary makes is that the NFL is like the tobacco industry in the sense of, you know, anybody that smokes now, you know, present company included, understands the risks that are inherent with smoking. But if you smoked back in the, you know, the 20s or the 30s before they had regulations, you know, you really didn't know what was going on with the chemicals inside of a cigarette. And I think the case that they're making in this documentary is the NFL was the same way. You know, now the players know the risks that they take into their own hands. But before, not only did they not know the science, but the NFL had doctors that were like, oh, just walk it off and you'll be good. You know, sit down for 10 minutes and the concussion will go away. When now we know that that's not the case. So I'm definitely interested to see, you know, what kind of evidence that the filmmakers present and, you know, the way the discussion spins forward.
No end to half the battle.
All just power.
Knowing is half the battle and having a big players union behind you is the other half if you want to get things done. So that's We Got Issues for this week. Let us know what you thought about this discussion, and if you get a chance to watch the documentary on Tuesday, leave us some feedback on the Facebook wall or on Twitter, KOS_POD on Twitter, facebook.com/KingsSport. Coming up next, the segment that you guys wait for each and every week, and hopefully we'll have some positive things to say this week. It just won't be a burial of TNA, but we got the Ringside Rap coming up next. More Kings of Sport right after the break. And now it's time to get you caught up on the week's biggest stories from the world of professional wrestling. It's the Ringside Wrap on the Kings of Sport.
And welcome back to the Kings of Sport. It is five-time fantasy football world champion Alfred Big Nasty Pinola alongside Nate Milton and Marcus Vandenberg, bringing us back from break. And I don't know if you guys like the battle. I know Nate can spit a couple of lines. You know, he can rap. But this Sunday, we've got a battle in WWE that as many people in a cipher may see, and that's WWE Battleground. Nate, are you looking forward to this pay-per-view, and if so, why?
Yeah, I bomb atomically. That's all you're going to get for free.
That's it?
And that's it. That's all you're going to get for free.
I built you up as a phenomenal battle rapper. Nah, that's all you're going to give us.
You know what I'm saying? The only part about the freestyle that I'm not cool with is the free. So if you want this hot fire, you got to pay.
Pay style.
Wow.
Exactly. But no, I'm not really interested in this. Like I kept calling it when we were talking before we came back from break. I kept calling it payback because there's been so many of these new pay-per-views and I first of all, I didn't know Battleground was coming up this week, and second of all, I didn't even know the name of the show. But I mean, the main event I'll probably check out, but everything else, even the Punk and Ryback deal, I mean, they've done as good as they could building it up, but I'm really not enthused for this. I think it's just too many shows. What is this, the second of three shows in a month and a half?
Yeah, they always have this stretch of three shows in like 6 weeks, and then I just don't, just take two of them out. I have no interest in this show. I have no interest in the product at the moment. I have Raw on at work in the background, and the only time I have to turn it off is when it gets really embarrassing. Because my coworkers give me shit all the time for watching wrestling in the office. So when Los Matadores came out on Raw, I turned it off before they even saw it. So I was like, how do you explain the guy wearing a midget costume dressed as a bull? I was just like, I can't do this. So I turned it off immediately. But yeah, I have no interest in this pay-per-view. And I think we're really seeing the effect of not having John Cena around on TV. Because we're seeing the same matches over and over again. And I don't think the audience in general pretty cares at this point. I mean, how many times are we going to see Daniel Bryan versus Randy Orton?
Well, that and WWE is now going head-to-head every week with the NFL, which is a monster. And Marcus, you're saying how you've lost interest in the product. You're not alone. Raw had the lowest rating of the year this past week. I think it drew a 2.68 or something. It was a terrible rating. And it's just WWE, along with competing with the NFL, that can't be their only excuse. Yes, John Cena is gone as well, but this storyline is not connecting, and it's like it's been designed for WWE to start making that downward spiral. They've completely buried every babyface not named Daniel Bryan up until last week when Daniel Bryan was buried in a fair fight against Randy Orton. Randy Orton decimated him, made him look weak like a non-wrestler where his girlfriend had to come out and defend him, and it wasn't a good look. And Triple H's character, I am a Triple H apologist. I can defend him with the best of them, but this authoritative character is not a character. It's just Triple H, Paul Levesque, really just brushing everything off and not selling for anybody and not really getting deep into any type of caricature like Vince McMahon does. So this angle as a whole, I think, has been a big miss for the WWE, and they need to find another direction.
First of all, I'm going to comment about that, but we are watching. I'm watching at least Impact and flipping back and forth between Impact and the baseball game. And you have to watch Impact this week, folks, for nothing else. A segment where AJ Styles runs into the crowd and he is swarmed. And I think this may be the most black people Alan Jones has ever been around in his entire life. Because they're like 50. Did you see it, Marcus?
No. Me watching Impact? No, I'm watching baseball.
There's like 50 black people like holding AJ up, and he's just like, he's like comfortably uncomfortable is the best way to describe it. He's like, all right, I love you guys too. Just watch the hands, watch the wallet.
This is Cypher.
I seen 8 Mile. I seen 8 Mile. But getting back to the WWE, I think there are some cool elements, but I also think these are some cool elements that are wasted on this show. And I'm particularly speaking about the angle with the Rhodes and the Shield. You know, I think Cody Rhodes has been built up extremely well. They, of course, Dusty's great anytime he's on TV. Even Dustin, you know, Goldust, he's played his part well, but I think you probably get more eyes to see this angle on a Raw than you would on this Battleground pay-per-view because it has no interest, no buzz, no juice, at least from, you know, the internet fans or at least even the casual fans. I think, you know, that's an angle that's going to go to waste. I think another match between Orton and Bryan is a waste. I think you could have done maybe, you know, a tag team match or, you know, a Survivor Series style match to kind of prolong this feud. But another one-on-one match at this stage of the game, I don't think is what this feud needs. So it's a lot of, I think, Mark, it's just a combination between cool things that nobody's going to see and also the same old, you know, without being something to get in there to refresh it.
I'm pretty sure we're going to see at least one more Brian Orton match later this month at Hell in a Cell. I think that'll be the blow off, but that I don't know what they do with the title. I mean, do they somehow
get you could have done a thing. I don't know who the Miz is. Like, you could have had Miz and Brian, as much as I hate the Miz. You know, because Miz never really got his payback after that quote-unquote life-threatening injury that he was back from the very next week. Like, why isn't the Miz, you know, Daniel Bryan's right-hand man at this point in the feud, you know, going off of what he went through in Cleveland?
If his career wasn't ruined, they've ruined it already. And, I think that's why.
Yeah, I mean, they got to figure out what to do with the title first. And then before they break off into separate, you know, directions, you know, we still need to crown a champion. So I'm hoping they find a way to crown a champion on Sunday. I have a feeling that they will somehow stretch this vacant title out into Hell in a Cell and then have it decided there and then move on to a Survivor Series main event, a traditional Survivor Series main event. But I am waiting for the Raw where Vince McMahon comes back out and begins his face turn, because they might have to speed that up based on the ratings.
And that'll probably be this Monday.
And wouldn't you expect, I know, you know, we got to figure out the title situation here, but I think the bigger story, do you want Bryan to win the title before facing Triple H, or do you want that to be part of the chase? Because I think, you know, having Bryan have to get through Triple H to eventually get to his ultimate goal makes Bryan stronger and makes the story stronger, rather than doing it the other way around with Bryan winning the title and then fighting Triple H.
This kind of may be indicative of the fact that he may not win the title and then spawn off into a feud with Triple H. If you look at the way they booked him this past Monday, it does not look like he's that same guy who they're getting ready to launch into that other superstardom threshold. He's just not. He just looked like a jobber. He was treated like a jobber. He didn't wrestle. And when it came push to shove, he got beaten up by Randy Orton. So I think that they're going to continue to keep him at that upper mid-card level, and Randy Orton is going to soldier on as champion.
Yeah, I agree. I think if he got the title back now, it wouldn't mean as much. But if he had to go through, you know, Survivor Series match, if he had to go through Triple H, if he had to win the Rumble itself, I could see the actual, whenever he does win the title, meaning more as opposed to him just winning it back after he was stripped twice now of it.
Before we get out of here, I want to talk about TNA Impact, because I know Nate is itching to try to apologize for it once again. This past week, we get to see Dixie Carter, the heel, the great character, freak out after Hulk Hogan says that he will be quitting TNA. Do you like this direction for the Dixie Carter character? Is there hope for this angle, Nate?
I just want to know, is Hulk really quitting? Because that would make all of this worth it, in my opinion. You know, take the Jays and kick rocks, brother.
If Dixie Carter took a shit in the ring, I think Nate would find a positive thing to say about the whole thing. She had good form there, that bowel movement. He's so optimistic about this.
I just want Hogan gone. Like, if this is an angle, you know, then I don't know where they're going with it. But if this is a way of actually writing Terry Bollea out of the show, I'm all for it, because he got to be gone. He's got to be gone. He is adding nothing to this company.
And if this is the last we see of Hulk Hogan in TNA, what was your favorite memory of him?
Other than the last moment, I would say, man, Hulk has had some great moments, some not scripted. For instance, when he announced the main event title match that wasn't going to take place that very night, I enjoyed some of his moments where he, you know, got on Twitter and said his daughter looked hot. That was a great moment, Terry.
Just a cutie, brother.
Yeah. In terms of being in the ring, I would say Hogan's best moment in TNA was probably his most surprising moment, and that was when him and Sting were able to pull off a halfway decent match at Bound for Glory. Yeah, because I thought that was going to be an absolute train wreck, and it wasn't great, but, you know, they pulled it off better than it had any right to be.
Well, we're going to leave it right there, and I appreciate you making me the ambassador of this segment, Brother Nate. But coming up in segment four, we talk about another ambassador.
You remember we got another segment, right?
We talk about another ambassador in our next segment, which is four, which comes after three, and he wants no new friends, no new friends, no new friends, no new friends. Stick and stay, it's Kids of Sport. Coming back.
We've always said the Kings of Sport was the best podcast around, but now the reviews are in and the people have spoken. Here's what you had to say about the show. This is a sports podcast for the people, by the people. There are no old guys talking about the good old days. These are brothers that are connected to what's going on now. They bring you the latest information as well as comparing current events to historical ones. If there is one sports podcast that you need to listen to, make it this one. This is a very good show with three brilliant co-hosts who keep it real. Younger guys with great minds for sports. They have differing opinions and back it up with facts and figures. Always entertaining and an enjoyable listen. I am down with the Kings. The Kings of Sport is the best thing going on the internet. These guys rock. Give them a listen. You won't be disappointed. So there you have it. But you don't have to take their word for it. Find out for yourself. Listen to the Kings of Sport and make up your own mind. We guarantee we're the best show around.
Who are you talking to right now? Who is it you think you see? You clearly don't know who you're talking to, so let me clue you in. I am not in danger, Skyler. I am the danger. A guy opens his door and gets shot. You think that of me? No. I am the one who knocks.
Welcome back to the Kings of Sport, the world's most dangerous sports program. Don't you ever forget it. And we are brought to you by the good people at Audible.com. And Audible.com, if you don't know about them, let me tell you about them. Audible.com is the premier provider of digital audiobooks with over 100,000 titles to choose from in every genre. We're talking about thrillers, business, romance, comedy, sci-fi, and many, many more. Audible titles play on your iPhone, Kindle, Android, and more than 500 devices for listening anytime, anywhere. And for you guys, the listeners of the Kings of Sport podcast, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you the opportunity to check out their service. And some of the great titles on Audible are Gone Girl, Bad Luck and Trouble, The Witness, Last Season by Phil Jackson, 50 Shades of Grey for all you ladies out there, and of course, Star Trek Into Darkness. So to download your free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/thekingsofsport. Again, that's audibletrial.com/thekingsofsport to get your free audiobook, to get your free 30-day trial, and to check out this great service from audible.com. Again, Audible's down with the Kings. You guys are down with the Kings. So get down with audible.com. And it is time to close up shop, and we do it like we do it each and every week with the one and only segment four, often imitated, never ever duplicated. We give you the latest news and information from the that convergence where sports and pop culture combine and just create a gumbo, a stew, if you will, of ratchetness. And I think we got to start off, like Alfred alluded to at the end of last segment, with our neighbors to the north, and a big move for the Toronto Raptors. Brother Marcus, why don't you let the people know what's going on up in Toronto?
The Toronto Raptors gained a new ally,
a new friend, a new
ambassador. His name is Drake, so there's that. But he's still Drake. He's still a name, and he is trying to make the Toronto Raptors relevant. It's been a long time, if ever, if the Raptors have been relevant, maybe since the Vince Carter and Trace McGrady days. But, you know, this week the NBA All-Star Game announced that they're heading to Toronto in a couple of years, and Drake is excited to be sort of part of that, not only the All-Star festivities in 2016, but he's trying to work directly with the team and trying to, I guess, sort of do what Jay-Z did in terms of the Brooklyn Nets, to sort of give them that rub and hopefully get some people, mainly free agents, interested in coming to Toronto.
Yeah, I guess that he's doing like a redesign of the uniforms and you know, the marketing and things of that nature. So we'll see. I think, if anything, he's already got a ready-made theme song for the team in about 2 or 3 years. Started from the bottom, we're still here. Started at the bottom, now the whole team still here. Because I don't care who you got in that spot, Toronto is just not a desirable destination for most big-name free agents.
A little bit of rapping from Nate Mills for free. How, was that so hard?
Hey, I only give out other people's raps for free. I don't give out my own personal Godfather rhymes for free.
I agree with what you're saying, Nate, but the thing is, if any organization or destination needed somebody like Drake to come on and make it look cool, like a hip city to be, it is Toronto. Brooklyn really already has that type of vibe to where they're not going to have a problem attracting free agents to that inner city with the Barclays Center and whatnot. They don't need Jay-Z to be there, but Toronto needs a Drake. They need an A-list star to be right there front and center talking about how cool it is to be part of the Toronto Raptors. Because let's face it, the NBA, when you're recruiting free agents, most of the time it's going to be an African-American, and they're not trying to live in Toronto. I'm not sure it's got that large of a population of African-Americans not named Nate Milton. So
and Morgan Campbell.
And Morgan. Shout out to Morgan. So, you know, I think it is for naught, but they've got the right idea.
I went to Toronto last October. I had a blast. It is a cool city. It's a cool downtown scene. Yeah, the weather sucks, but that's pretty much anywhere on the East Coast. The one thing that really sucks for players is I believe they're taxed at a higher rate because they are not Canadian citizens. So that is a bit down point to playing for the Raptors for these guys, is they're losing more money as opposed to guys who play in Texas and Florida who are making more because there's no state tax. So it's one of those places where I think you can attract guys, but at the same time their history has been so poor in recent years in terms of the product on the court. All it takes is a season, a decent season, a playoff run, and you know, it is a good basketball town. They do love the sport of basketball there, despite, you know, the stereotypes of hockey being, you know, the number one thing in Canada, which it is. But, you know, all it takes is winning for people to jump right on that bandwagon.
Now, could we see, let's just spin things forward a couple years, a couple seasons down the road, and let's say that the team in Miami wins another championship and that team starts to, the pieces go their separate ways. Could we see a return of a prodigal son to Toronto as somebody that we know is a very sensitive, warm-hearted human being, aligning with Drake? I think, could we see Chris Bosh back in that purple uniform?
I could see it. I think he left the team on good terms. I mean, he didn't really pull a LeBron in terms of the decision. I'm pretty sure he let them know what he was thinking in terms of moving on as a free agent. So that actually wouldn't be a bad move. The problem is they're pretty strapped for money at the moment,
yeah,
based on their contracts, and they now have Rudy Gay, who is not someone you want eating up $18 million this season. So if they can try to find a way to, you know, work around some contract issues they have currently, but that's not a bad option. But at the same time, they do have Valanciunas, who is a, you know, 21-year-old center who, you know, could fill that spot in the paint. So, yeah.
Yeah, like Marcus said, they've got the talent there. It's not some wasteland from a talent standpoint. It's not like a team that's a lost cause, but it's just a destination. And Chris Bosh, I think why he worked in Toronto in hindsight is that he was a big fish in a small pond. And now once you saw the pressures in Miami, I'm not saying he didn't work with Chris Bosh, but he wasn't the same guy as he was in Toronto, and he was asked to play different roles that didn't suit his skill set. But I do think that if he was to go back to Toronto, he would be the Chris Bosh of old.
Yeah, I'm just waiting to see what goes down with this. I think you know, it's a very interesting proposition. I think, like you mentioned, Drake is the guy in this era, in this age, especially in that city, to make some changes for that roster. But I think it's going to be an uphill battle, uphill climb for that team.
If the Raptors were smart, they would try to find a way to get the number one pick this year and bring back Andrew Wiggins. If they had Andrew Wiggins, the local hero on that team, I think that would really give the city of Toronto and the Raptors organization the boost that they need going forward. The problem is they're too good to taint. So, I mean, they're good enough that they're probably going to be, you know, 30-35 wins. So they would have to essentially trade up to get that pick. But you never know. He dangled out Rudy Gay, you know, maybe an expiring contract in their first-round pick to try to swing that. But, yeah.
It's a good marriage. It's a good marriage. I think some good things will come from the association. I wish they would change the name, because the Raptors is a idiotic name from a movie that's 20 years old, 30 years old maybe at this point. But maybe they can be the Toronto Rappers and have like the 2 Chainz will be their mascot.
Two points. After every basket.
Yeah. Oh, jeez. Like, it'll get to the point where I used to hate when the Pistons were good, because after every turnover, you'd hear, Detroit basketball. Yeah, so, yeah, we'll, after every Raptors bucket, you, 2 points. True. But let's talk about another intriguing NBA story. But before we get to that, I just want to mention, you mentioned Bosh not doing a LeBron. Did you see that clip of Kyrie Irving at that school or whatever?
I did.
The African and school?
And the little kid was like, Kyrie, are you going to leave us like LeBron did? And Kyrie's like, no, I'm here. I'm going to stay in Cleveland. Like, they already got this boy lying.
Lying ass.
Because there's no way Kyrie Irving is staying in Cleveland for the remainder of his career. No.
Mm. What if Cleveland lures LeBron James there? They could have another dynasty in Cleveland, or they could have a dynasty in Cleveland and another LeBron James run.
Yeah, but
it's not out of the question.
I don't. Nobody stays with their, you know, unless your name is Kobe Bean Bryant, you're not staying with the same team for the remainder of your career.
Okay, yeah, and in this day and age, I don't think that was the emphasis. I think really what the kid meant to ask is, are you going to leave in your prime? Because eventually it's going to get to the point where if he leaves, well, whatever, he's gone, he's past his prime, and they're not going to hold that against him. But I think what he means is, in the context of LeBron James, are you going to leave when you're still one of the best players in the world? And that it's a possibility that he could stay.
The funniest part of the video, though, is that, like, if you zoom out, if you had that technology, you could see Dan Gilbert whispering in a little boy's ear with his son looking like the Six Flags dude.
they have a good young team. But you got to remember, Andrew Bynum's only 25. So
yeah,
if they get, you know, something out of him,
yeah,
combined with Waiters and you know, a healthy Varechow and Tristan Thompson, Jared Jack off the bench, I mean, they could be, you know, a playoff team for sure this year. Anthony Bennett, when he gets healthy.
I don't know about betting on Bynum, though.
Yeah, it's a risky move, but I could see. I mean, you got to remember, Kyrie will get the most money from Cleveland. So if he's looking for that first money grab as a young, you know, 23-year-old, then he'll stay with Cleveland at least through one match deal. And then when he's really in his prime at, you know, 26, 27, then yeah, I could see him leaving. But why not stay? They're turning the corner here finally.
Yeah, I can definitely see him staying through the next contract. But after that, like I said, unless you're Kobe or Duncan or, you know, that players like that, you know, we don't see players stay with one team for the remainder of, you know, their careers anymore. So, I mean, it's just a matter of when, you know, whenever he leaves.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So, but let's talk about the story that I really was looking forward to. And, you know, we talked about Hulk Hogan earlier, leaving TNA possibly. And after I saw the segment, I just saw the segment a few minutes ago, I I have my doubts if he's really leaving or not, but it's always a tough thing when you have great people or great players, great athletes, great entertainers past their prime that don't know when to leave the stage, and some want to stage multiple comebacks. But an interesting kind of theory or prediction that was put out there by Jalen Rose this past week on a podcast with Bill Simmons. Shout out to Jalen Rose. Jalen Rose said that he believes that Michael Jeffrey Jordan will come out of retirement for one game this year and play on the Charlotte Bobcats, Marcus.
I totally believe this. I thought it would happen last year, actually. I was looking at the schedule to see, you know, when they could do it, if there was a certain game in April that they could just roll this out. But Jordan has said he's wanted to play in his 50s. And, you know, based on the current roster of the Charlotte Bobcats, they could, you know, use Jordan for a night. It wouldn't hurt them to be a sideshow for one game. So I could totally see it happening.
And that's exactly what it would be. It would be like a bobblehead night. It would be that times about a million, because now you're getting the greatest player ever to come out and play for a night. And I'm telling you right now, I don't care where this game is. If and when Michael Jordan comes out of retirement, I'm going to go see him. I never saw Michael Jordan in person. Well, I did when I was really, really, really young, but I don't remember it. And I you know, he's not going to be the Michael Jordan of old or the Michael Jordan of prime, but I want to at least say that I saw Michael Jordan and I remember when I was there to see him play.
Well, it's going to be in Charlotte. I mean, Michael's not a dummy. If he's going to come out, he's going to come out in the way that benefits his organization. So
I meant when it is. So, yeah, it's going to be in Charlotte for sure.
I mean, this is so intriguing because, you know, we've had the kind of – Michael's kind of been back in the public conscious the past week or so doing the promotion for NBA 2K14 and talking about who he'd like to play and giving backhanded compliments to Kobe Bryant. And I think it would be interesting. I think Michael is still – granted, he's 50 and he's probably smoked way too many cigars to be a night-in, night-out player. But for one night, if he trains for one night, I definitely could see Michael Jordan, you know, having an impact in an NBA game.
Let me just toss this date out to you, and let me know what you think. The Charlotte Bobcats end their regular season at home April 16th versus Chicago Bulls. I mean, if you're going to do it, why not stick it to your former team?
Yeah, will D-Rose still be in a suit by then? that would be embarrassing if 50-year-old Michael Jordan is playing and Derrick Rose is like, oh, I just don't feel like it right now.
The more people expect Michael Jordan to come out of retirement and play, the more it's going to be treated like a big fight, like Floyd Mayweather. Oh, who's he going to fight? And no matter what fight he takes, it's damned if you do, damned if you don't. Like, oh, now he's ducking Kobe. Why couldn't he play against the Lakers? Now he's ducking LeBron. The Heat were just in town, and Michael Jordan come out of retirement. So I think it's going to be a very nice little angle towards Michael Jordan coming out of retirement.
That'll still be the biggest. That'll be, you know, arguably the biggest NBA game in terms of ratings for the entire season. You know, TNT or whoever would have the coverage of that game, maybe ABC, ESPN, they would give the, you know, the NBA Finals treatment to that game.
I don't know if it would top whatever they have. I forget what the Christmas game is. I think it's Lakers Heat and something else. We're talking about a Wednesday night game, which would probably be on cable, not on primetime, not on ABC. So I don't know if it would be the top program, but it would be a ratings draw, especially with Chicago.
It absolutely would. Yeah.
The other game I was looking for was they play Miami at home in January, and I was looking to see when they played the Lakers. I figured if you're going to do it, at least do it against a Kobe or a LeBron or at least the Bulls. Mm-hmm. So. Miami is January, which seems a little too early for him to get back into shape. The Lakers, December. So, yeah, I mean, I think Jalen's out of know what's up, and he probably knows the schedule and that team at the very end of the season. And, you know, Charlotte's going to be in the playoffs. They'll be done at that point in terms of competing.
I think the only bad thing with the Lakers is, you know, it's missing that one element that would make it just the greatest regular season game ever. And that's the man sitting on the bench coaching for the Lakers. Can you imagine the hype if Phil Jackson was Lakers coach and you're bringing Kobe in to face Michael one last time?
Oh, that would be good. Yeah.
From a rating standpoint, it can do a Christmas Day rating if they promote it as such. There's so many outlets to promote this game. There's so many sideshow outlets like TMZ.com, which would be on the scoop, and TMZ's got its own sports division now. And if word gets out that, yes, Michael Jordan for sure is coming back, and that date is announced, monster rating.
If it's a TNT game, you had the pregame with Barkley and Jordan having a one-on-one sit-down. Like, Michael, when you said you was coming back, I thought it was a terrible idea.
And remember, people are going to say, oh, Michael Jordan's greatest moments ahead of him coming back. You're going to see all these clips of his vintage days, and people are going to fall in love with that Michael Jordan and say, oh, well, now I can't wait for that Michael Jordan to come back, even though it's going to be the older, slower Michael Jordan.
Yeah, now people like to crap on Jordan when he was at the Wizards, but that's not fun. He wasn't the Jordan that, you know, at his peak, in his prime, the greatest player ever, but he was still a good NBA player. So I think, you know, if Jordan comes out, I'm setting the bar at 15 points, Marcus. You think Jordan gets over or under 15 if he comes back?
Under. I don't think he plays 15 minutes.
No!
I don't know. I mean, I think Michael is a competitor. If Michael, you know, I think Michael is going to play for as long. I mean, who's going to tell Michael to sit on the bench? I think Michael's going to get out there, get it out of his system. I can see Michael putting in 20 minutes.
Yeah, I think he goes something like, well, depending on how long he plays, let's say he does. I'm going to be an optimist, say he does go the whole game. I say he goes 9 for like 26 or 27
plays the entire game?
Like 20 points. Yeah, it's Michael Jordan, most competitive man who's ever come to the planet Earth. He's going to train like he's going to play for an entire game, and maybe he'll just stand out there on the wing and be a glorified wing shooter, but I think he can manage to play a whole game. If it's just going to be one comeback, one game, and he knows he's going to never come back, he's going to want to play the whole game.
He's not playing the entire game.
I think 40 minutes. I'm saying 20 minutes, and he scores 15 points.
By the way.
In 20 minutes?
Who else is taking shots on the Bobcats?
Al Jefferson.
I don't think Al Jefferson is waving off the boss.
By the way, you know what the move might be here as looking at the schedule? It might be worth the investment to just buy tickets now, just in case, and see if it happens. And if so, you're cashing in. You can sell those, you know, for an ungodly amount of money.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to see if that takes place. But, yeah, from one great legend coming back to three future legends that got to go because they got things to do, I think we're going to call it a show this week.
Works for me.
I feel good about what we did.
Yeah, I mean, I got things to do. I got to put in a call to Freddie Freeman and these boys, get him.
You cut out there,
so we can at least get one game on the Dodgers.
Yeah, good luck. Drink you tomorrow night. So,
Tim Hudson, where are you when we need you for this week? We're currently talking to Silver Fox Alfredo Torres, the host of the Great Torres versus Zombies podcast. To chat his beloved Dolphins as well. The Walking Dead premieres next week, so we'll pick his brain about The Walking Dead, and I know there's some fans out there that are into that show, maybe not Marcus, so we'll see what he has to say about The Walking Dead.
Yeah, not a Walking Dead fan.
Oh, I did want to ask you, since I know you don't watch movies, but you do watch TV, mm-hmm. What'd you think of the Breaking Bad finale?
I am currently firing through. I'm only like halfway through season 3, so I am not there yet.
Oh, man. I thought it was great.
Oh, you usually don't get that for series finales.
Granted, I'm not a big fan of Dexter, but compare Dexter's finale to Breaking Bad's finale, it's like night and day. I was like, Breaking Bad's finale was pretty much almost everything that you would want to wrap up that series.
Yeah, so hopefully by next week I'll be done. I think I have maybe 30 episodes left. So
I think you can maybe make the argument, and I'm going to go ahead and make it, that...
Don't say it.
Hold on. Bryan Cranston.
Oh, okay.
You thought I was going to say it's the best show ever?
Yeah.
No, I've seen... been made. I don't believe it at all. Okay. I think it's a good show. Maybe one of the best shows of this current era, but not the best of all time. But I think you can make the argument that Bryan Cranston is the best television actor of this generation. Hmm. Winning Emmys for comedy with Malcolm in the Middle, and then doing a complete 180 of Walter White, and still being an excellent character and being on one of the best shows on TV. I think you could make the argument that, you know, for the last 10, maybe 15 years, this dude is one of the best actors on TV.
Yeah, the argument doesn't have to be made that he's one of them, but what you bring up does give credence to the argument that he may be the best TV actor.
I mean, we've seen that transition from, you know, we've seen guys that are cop show guys that do great on cop shows, guys that are comedy guys that, you know, have one comedy hit after another, but you know, this dude was on Malcolm in the Middle, was great on that, and then made that transition to Breaking Bad. I don't think we've seen somebody with that kind of range on TV in a long time.
I would throw James Spader in there because, okay, you know, he was very, very good on The Office, I thought. I thought it was going to tank once he got on as, like, Michael Scott's replacement, but I thought he had this dry humor that was just on point. And now he's going to be in this new show. I can't remember what's it called, but he looks amazing in that, and he's going to play some creepy...
The Blacklist?
Blacklist, that's what it is. And he's going to play this dark, creepy, like Hannibal Lecter type character. So, and it looks like he's going to knock that out of the park too. So, yeah, I think James Spader would be in the discussion.
Yeah, Spader's in the discussion. What do you think, Marcus?
You made a good argument with Cranston. I mean, it took me a while for me to remember that he was the dude from Malcolm in the Middle. It really hit me, like, after I started watching Breaking Bad, I was like, oh shit, this is the same dude. So,
yeah.
The fact that you don't even recognize the two characters at all really goes, you know, it really credits his work and what he can do as an actor.
Yeah, because, I mean, if you remember Malcolm in the Middle, like, Hal, the dad, was just so silly and ridiculous and over the top, and Walter White is a completely opposite character. You know, he's so cold and calculating and understated and analytical. I'm like, you know, this dude is like, I mean, he's getting the props now, but I think, you know, this dude was slept on for a minute.
Yeah.
So that's my thoughts on Breaking Bad. If you haven't seen the finale, I'm not going to spoil it for you, but you definitely, if you even, because I wasn't a hardcore Breaking Bad fan until maybe season two, beginning of season three, that's when I got into the show. But if you've only seen like even a handful of episodes, you definitely owe it to yourself to see how the story ends, because it went out really cool.
It starts off slow. Season one was short, but it sort of set the path of the direction of the show. And then by season two, it really picks up. And, you know, I'm currently in the middle of season three with the whole Gus dilemma in terms of him wanting his 400 pounds a week or 200 pounds a week of meth. So it really picks up in season three.
Yeah, Gus was there when they did one of those after show wrap-ups, and he was on there. Giancarlo Esposito?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he was on the show. He was really cool. I think most people would know him, or most black people probably would know him from his roles in the Spike Lee movies. But you know, when he was Gus on Breaking Bad, he really did his thing on that show as well.
And for the record, The Wire, a better TV show than Breaking Bad.
Yeah, I was gonna say if you want to make the argument,
white people listen to that. The Wire, better than Breaking Bad. Thank you.
Yeah, to me, if we're talking cable. Because I think the argument could be made that there's some great shows on network television, but they didn't have the freedoms that the cable shows did. Mm-hmm. But I think if you're talking best cable shows of this generation, I think you're talking about The Wire, you're talking about The Sopranos and Breaking Bad.
Yeah, Omar was a bad dude, too.
And just based on not seeing the finale, I'm pretty sure the Breaking Bad finale is better than The Wire finale, which is sort of a letdown.
And better than The Sopranos finale.
That, too. but from start to finish, just the storylines and the characters, and I mean, nothing will top season four of The Wire. So it better show. So it's just this past week of people just sort of geeking out about Breaking Bad, about how great it is. It's just like, come on, like
greatest TV show ever. I'm like,
calm down.
Like I'll give you greatest TV show in the last 5 years. I'll give you that.
Yeah, sure.
But not greatest show ever.
No.
Not with TNA Impact is on. Boom. You talk about Bryan Cranston being versatile. Dixon Carter is a true thespian.
Who knew she had range?
Does she?
She can stand up. She can get on her knees. She can fake cry. She is a wonderful actress. Where's her nighttime Emmy?
She could be Miss Elizabeth or she could be Vicky Guerrero. In the blink of an eye.
Hey, occasionally she's still sprinkling some Stephanie McMahon.
Yeah.
Wonderful. It's wonderful. That's going to do it for this week. Real quick, though, I did want to just put this out there. We usually don't talk politics, but one of the big stories in the real world that has actually affected the sports world is the government shutdown. At last check mark, it's, I guess, the Service Academy. They won't be playing their football games over the weekend.
Correct. You can watch, I think it's Army, BC, and Air Force and Navy on Saturday.
Okay. So, you know, I'm glad they got that resolved, but, you know, it's ridiculous. It's churlish, as one of my aunts would say. I think both parties are acting like their mascots. The Democrats are acting like a donkey, and the Republicans are acting like stubborn elephants. So get it together. Do your damn jobs, because a lot of people are hurting. And it doesn't just affect government. It affects everything. It affects retail workers. It affects, you know, the food industry, because if people ain't got money from their government jobs, they're not going out to eat. They're not shopping. You know. So get it together, man, especially if you're getting paid and other people aren't getting paid and kids ain't getting their WIC money. Come on, buddy. Come on. Like, how you going to be like, oh, I really feel for my constituents, even though, you know, you hopping in the Bentley going home, and this baby got to eat Cheerios for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. I mean, then again, like, I don't know, like, babies eating, I'm not good with kids.
Healthy babies aren't eating Cheerios, no.
And they ain't even real Cheerios, like for real. They be like the King Vitamin, the store brand.
I did see this like 2-year-old at the fair last Friday eating a pickle, like a, you know, one of the full
fried,
like,
pickles.
No, not the deep fried, like a pickle out the jar. And I was like, what are you giving your kid all this sodium for at 2?
Honey boo boo.
Yeah. So yeah. I won't say what skin color she was, but
we know it
shouldn't surprise you.
Hey, there's some ignorant parents coming all shapes and colors. I work at a fast food establishment, and you will not believe some of the, like, kids is getting grande meals and extra chicken, extra beef. And I'm like, your baby is already stretching out that little onesie. You don't need to be pumping all this, these, what do they call it, preservatives and additives into their diet. So
fake meat.
Hey,
We didn't say where you worked.
Now I work at Poyos Hermanos. I work. I just ask for Gus. Ask for Gus.
Yeah. He'll help you out.
Oh man, that brings it all together. Oh yeah, man. If you just to Marcus though, like, you ain't gonna believe what happens at the end. I don't know if you read ahead in the spoilers or seen articles about season 3, man. But
no, I haven't seen any spoilers about season 3.
All I'm gonna say is Gus goes out like a G.
Well, that means Gus dies, so thank you.
No, I'm saying he went out to get some money, but you don't know what's going to happen when he goes out, Marcus.
And on that note,
why are you trying to, see, you're always trying to twist.
You can follow me on Twitter at Marco Will. MarcoWill. Please don't tweet me spoilers of Breaking Bad. No, nope, don't do
he
that.
He goes out to the lobby to get himself a snack.
Alfred.
No, you can follow Big Nasty on Twitter at This Is Nasty. A quick shout out to Kevin Ding and Dan Pompey. I had a telethon last week for TNA. I might have to have one for the New York Times. And watch Bleach Report, read Bleach Report, and love me like I know you do.
All right. And I am the Godfather, Nate Milton. And, hold on. Let me see. John Pollock is on the line. Let me see if I can bring John into our call. We'll see. John Pollock.
What's going on, guys?
Hey, you're on with the Kings of Sport. We're just wrapping up the show. This is like television when they have those walk-ins.
Oh, I see. I've stumbled upon this.
Like, somebody rings the doorbell. It's like, who is it? It's John Pollock, everybody.
It's our my neighbor, John Pollock.
Yeah, look at that.
That's our quirky neighbor to the north.
Well, if you guys are still recording, I'll just call back later.
We're just wrapping up. If you don't mind, let the people know what you got coming up this week.
What do I have coming up this week? I've got Saturday. I'm learning the art of belt wrestling. I have to study belt wrestling.
Belt wrestling.
Yeah. You'll have no idea what this is. Belt wrestling. Geeky. It involves people with gis, and you are attached with belts.
So it's like a strap match.
It's kind of like a strap match, only you don't have to touch the four different corners. And I have to go all over the way to Russia to call this belt wrestling.
Wow.
So that's what I'm learning on Saturday. Probably a pretty exciting weekend, as you guys can tell.
One quick question for you, Pollock. What are your thoughts about the whole Drake Toronto Raptors initiative?
I feel that it's, I don't know. Well, what do you guys think about it? I think it doesn't hurt the Raptors, does it? Or is this just incredibly lame that they're reaching out to the only well-known Toronto celebrity outside of a 416 area code?
No, but if you're going to reach out to any celebrity in the NBA, Drake does kind of fit that mold to where he would be able to attract people who play basketball. You know?
I don't think it hurts. At the same time, I don't see anyone really deciding to go to a Raptors game because Drake is endorsing the Toronto Raptors. It seems like the Toronto. It's like your grandfather trying to be hip with like his much younger grandson, and here we're gonna introduce Drake to a whole audience. I don't know. The Raptors don't have much of a following here in Toronto. It's very limited. So I figure it's whatever you want to throw at the wall, let's try it. Why not?
Yeah, I think they're trying to do like the Nets did with Jay-Z. But, the difference may be that, Brooklyn in particular, New York in general, that's like a mecca of hip-hop. Whereas I don't know, how much cachet Drake has even in Toronto.
If anything, it's like the cool team in Toronto amongst like younger people is actually the Toronto Blue Jays. I think they have a much more younger audience that actually goes. Their merchandise sells incredibly well. It's like the Toronto Maple Leafs are like your steadfast team that everyone's going to go buy tickets to see. But in terms of like a younger audience, I think the Blue Jays have like one up over the Raptors. And it's very strange to hear that about baseball over basketball, but I think in Toronto they draw a much younger crowd. I think the Raptors are just, everyone knows they're around. It's just they're not a very good team, and no one really, I don't know. There is not a ton of buzz about the Raptors. It's a disappointing team that's given us very little hope outside of one season in like 2001.
Yeah, bring back Vince Carter and Tracy McGrady.
Yeah, we're talking about like guys that left this team like over a decade ago at this point. So that's what we cling to here in the world of the Raptors.
Poor Raptors.
Yes, poor Raptors. So for more, maybe for more Raptors talk, you can check out John Pollock and his buddy.
No. I'm not going to be talking about the Raptors at all. Believe me, this is the absolute. This is my ceiling of Raptors knowledge. I'm aware that people wear Toronto Blue Jays hats more so than I see people wearing Toronto Raptors jerseys in the city, and that's John Pollock's analysis.
As someone who owns two Blue Jays hats here in the States, I would co-sign on that.
Okay, there you go. And how much Raptors merchandise do you own?
Zero.
Nothing, right?
Zero.
Exactly. So there you go. A perfect example right
well,
there.
Well, if you bought Drake's new album, that's technically Raptors merchandise. Did you?
No, I didn't pay for Drake's album.
Does Drake get like a cut of anything now? Like when you buy a Raptors hat, is our world ambassador going to get a cut of every piece of merchandise? Because then that's a sweetheart deal for Drake.
Well, I think Tim Leiwicki's smart enough not to put him on that side of the payroll. I hope he's not getting a cut of merchandise.
Merchandise, so maybe he'll get a piece of it.
Does this mean Drake can now get into a locker room and not be stopped?
That's the real reason why. He wants to get into a championship locker room for that eventual Raptors championship.
Yeah. Guy just wanted season tickets. And they're like, all right, you're going to be our Jack Nicholson.
Front and center.
You'll be our Frankie Muniz for the Los Angeles Clippers.
Yeah, there. Exact direct comparison. Thank you.
All right, that's John Pollock. You can check him out at thefightnetwork.com as well as at Law Radio on Twitter. Him and Wei Ting do more podcasts than any human should rightfully do. And
apparently I do ones even when I'm not aware of it.
Even when he's not aware.
I don't know what happened.
And you can also check out Review and Impact, which should be up by the time you hear this. It should be up. And we'll talk more about Dixie Carter getting on her knees for one Terry Bollea. So for Marcus Vandenberg, for Big Nasty Albert Cunningham, for John Pollock, and for Wei Ting, wherever he is, I'm the Godfather Nate Milton, and you've been down with the Kings.
Well, that's all for this week's edition of the Kings of Sport. Be sure to come back next week for an all-new episode. You can leave feedback for the show on Twitter at KOS_POD. or via Gmail at thekingsofsport@gmail.com. Don't forget to like and rate us on iTunes and tell a friend. The Kings of Sport is a production of the Mosaic Podcast Network. Whether you like it or not, he's back. D-A-double-D-Y, that's X. Sharp as a tack, like I just left.